Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great Saturday or whatever day you're listening, if you're listening on the podcast version of this show. Either way, we're going to hope to make your day even just a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Hey, Julio. Did you know you could turn down the honor, the prestigious honor of being voted the sexiest man alive, according to People magazine?
Well, I didn't want anybody to know this, but yeah, I did know that because, unfortunately.
Okay, what was your year?
I did have to turn it down, for the past 25 years in a row. No, I'm kidding. No, I had no idea that was something that you had the opportunity of turning down. I thought it was something that was thrust upon you. Like, if you're the sexiest man alive, then you're the sexiest man alive. How is there like any debate of, well, no, I don't want to be the sexiest man. No, it's you're the sexiest man alive.
Sorry, buddy. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. So recently People magazine, they named their sexiest man alive. And maybe I'm doing this all out of spite because nobody called me, but I think this is hilarious. John Krasinski. Undoubtedly, sexy man, right? I mean, we can all admit, and this is almost like a lifetime achievement award because he's been in the industry for almost 20 years and he never won it. But there's like been a big outcry on TikTok and social media about the fact that it didn't go to Glenn Powell. Apparently, they tried to get Glenn Powell.
America's Next Great Movie Star?
Yeah, correct. And you can go back and you can listen to us discuss that on a previous episode. Just from a couple weeks ago, because this was Glenn Powell's year. What do you think about this? You got strong feelings about it?
I mean, you know, in the end, it's a scheme to sell some magazines. You know, that's all this has ever been. It's kind of like, you know, it's like the
Grammys or the Oscars.
Yeah, not so much that. More like it's like the, I'm trying to say this in a way that won't sound sexist.
No, dude, please lean
but
in.
This is like, it's like the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue for women.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
In some ways. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily only women that support that any more than I think it's only men that support the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. But, it's to appeal to the baser nature of people who appreciate that gender. Was that a PC enough way to say that?
I was about to say, I don't think you could have said it any more delicately, and I appreciate you for that. That's one of the many reasons why I love you. But what did Krasinski do this year, man? He was in Jack Reacher, what, like season three?
Not Jack Reacher,
something?
Jack Ryan. Jack Reacher's Alan Ritchson. Both Amazon shows, so you're on the right wavelength. I get where you'd go there, but yeah, I mean, he had If this year, which he directed and wrote.
Oh, sure, okay.
He was in it live action. He was in it live action. I was thinking he was one of the voice actors, but no, he was in it live action.
I'll take your word for it.
He was, of course, involved in the continuation of the Quiet Place franchise, although, again, not on screen in that this year.
Yeah, peripherally involved. I'm tired of talking about Krasinski, dude. Look, Glenn Powell was in Twisters. He was in Hitman. He was in Anyone But You. He's coming off the hills, Top Gun.
Glenn Powell,
sexiest man alive.
In fairness, Anyone But You was last year.
Actually, really fair. Yeah, I'm glad you said that.
But I don't necessarily disagree that this was probably Glenn Powell's year. It begins to be seen if it's a career year for him or not, because yeah, he's still fairly early into his career. I did recently just finally get around to watching Twisters.
Saw it on
a plane. Not bad. I was surprised.
Cool.
Like, I had no expectations for that movie at all. Like, I, you know, it's like, all right, this is a thing that's happening. But yeah, I watched it on a plane recently, and really bad. He and was it Daisy Edgar Jones that was the female lead? They had good chemistry. Anthony Ramos in there too. Always like him. A little bit of a weird role for him because he's usually a pretty likable guy in a lot of stuff, and you know, a little bit more. I don't know if unlikable is the right word, but less likable character in this one.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, the movie's not bad. Had some heart to it, and had some good effects, and you know, wasn't a bad way to kill an hour and a half on a plane.
Is it possible that this Krasinski win is the CIA trying to get back in the good graces of the American public? Is this possibly a psyop? That's what I want to know.
I mean, I don't know about all of that. but you're right in that, like, it was like, you know, Krasinski's been around for a long time. Obviously a good looking guy, obviously somebody a lot of people like, very likable guy. But it does feel like, well, this is about 5-10 years later than you would have expected this to be for him.
Yeah.
Versus it being like Glenn Powell's year. Did you say there was somebody else that turned it down too?
Apparently Pedro Pascal did, and I think you can make an argument for him as well.
Well, I mean, Pedro Pascal is, you know, the internet's daddy.
Yes, he is.
And I don't mean as in their father. I mean, as in, like, who's your daddy?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that, like, yeah, like, if you were going to tell me, you know, if there was not the opportunity to turn this down and it was just something that was thrust upon you. Yeah, like that would make sense. Either one of those would be like the it boy of the moment.
Who are you picking out of these three?
I don't know, man. But, you know, sadly,
come on, gut instinct.
The answer is sadly not Krasinski.
Yeah.
I like the dude a lot. And if you asked me out to dinner, I'd go. But, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I would almost say that even Pascal feels like a year or two ago.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I think it might be Powell. I think you might be.
Give me that white meat, milk toast, good old American Glenn Powell.
Yeah. I mean, I think Pascal's going to be back on a lot of people's radar now because, you know, Gladiator 2 just dropped this
week. Absolutely.
And, you know, we're getting ready for a new season of Last of Us. We're getting ready for the Mandalorian and Grogu movie that's going to be out, I think, next year. And, you know, Fantastic Four. Of course, mm-hmm. He's going to be playing Reed, much like John Krasinski, going to be playing Richards.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah, so maybe that's it. Maybe they are going for, like, you know, the daddy thing.
Because,
like, you know, if you think of the Fantastic Four as a family, Reed Richards is kind of the daddy.
He is daddy.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe they, well, we couldn't get one Reed Richards, we'll get the other Reed Richards. So, you know, next year, local resident Alex Hyde White, sexiest man alive.
Lobbying for that.
Yeah, yeah. You and Gruffudd, they're going to call him back up from the minors. You know who it's not going to be? Miles Teller.
Is that? No.
You know why? Because I can't say what I want to say. It starts with
several
an F.
Reasons. We'll
it
say
starts
that.
With it starts with an F, and then followed by that guy. yeah, not a big fan of Miles Teller. Talented guy, but there's just something about him that just rubs me the wrong way, man. Like,
yeah, he's no Krasinski.
He's no America's Next Great Movie Star Glenn Powell.
Yeah, correct.
But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, Powell's a charismatic guy, and I get it. I get why he has the success that he's having, and you know, we'll see where it goes from here. I wonder if he's gonna, like, because I think a big part of that was him playing off Sydney Sweeney in Anyone But You, even though, as I said, mm-hmm. that was last year. And I think she's kind of like the sexiest woman alive at the moment.
Yep.
Like, if you know, they don't give out that award, but if they did, like, she'd definitely be in the running. She's the it girl.
She's mommy.
Yeah. She's the it girl. So, like, I wonder if they're going to continue to play off each other. Obviously they got along well and they played off well against each other in that movie. I guess we'll see if they become like a regular screen pairing. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Whenever I see someone less fortunate than I, and let's face it, right, who isn't less fortunate than I? My tender heart tends to start to bleed. And when someone needs a makeover, I simply have to take over. I know exactly what they need. And even in your case, though it's the toughest case I've yet to face, don't worry, I'm determined to succeed. Follow my lead, and yes, indeed, you will be popular. You're gonna be popular. I'll teach you the proper ploys when you talk to boys, the ways to flirt and flounce. I'll show you what shoes to wear, how to fix your hair, everything that really counts to be popular. I'll help you be popular. You'll hang with the right cohorts. You'll be good at sports. Know the slang you've got to know. So let's start, 'cause you've got an awfully long way to go.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And man, there's an underestimation there with that particular song. That is popular from Wicked. And yeah, I think it's going to be popular, Jeremy. What do you think?
Yeah, I had a feeling ahead of time that it would be very interesting to see this movie fail. And what I was thinking is, it's not a Disney movie, and it's from a studio that typically doesn't do big musicals, and I think the budget was like $250 million. I don't know exactly if that's right or not, because they did split it into two. But I say all that to say, I wasn't moved by the trailers, and I had a sneaking suspicion that it might be a bomb, and boy, was I wrong by the looks of the way things are playing out.
Yeah, I think we're looking at something like a $130 million plus opening weekend, which would be one of the biggest opening weekends of the year. It's probably going to be one of the biggest movies of the year. I am not surprised at the success, because it's, first of all, it's a spinoff of The Wizard of Oz. That's always going to get some attention. Like, I'm hard-pressed to think of an Oz movie that's come out that has just been a complete and total bomb.
Return to Oz, but that was, like, a real weird niche thing.
Yeah, and that was pretty scary, and it was, in a weird time period, But, I mean, like, even the Sam Raimi Oz movie a few years back, what was it, Oz the Great and Powerful or something like that?
Uh-huh.
That movie made money, as far as I know.
It did.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like a runaway success, but it wasn't a failure either. And I saw it. It wasn't a creative failure either. It was, it was a decent flick. But this is, this has been running on Broadway for like 20 years.
Yeah.
It is a very popular show. No pun intended. Based on a popular novel by Gregory Maguire. So, the recipe was there. The songs have already been out there in the world. And
let's not diminish the just star power of Ariana Grande. And Cynthia Erivo, I hear, is fantastic in it as well. But there was always going to be interest generated by the music fans as well. So, like, all of these things definitely came together.
Yeah, I mean, to the extent that, theaters have had to put up signs saying, please don't sing along.
Oh, really?
Because there are going to be, this show has a lot, the Broadway show has a lot of fans. There are a lot of people who have listened to the original Broadway cast recording a million times and know every song.
Is it the Cats of this generation, or is it better than that?
Yeah, I loved it. It was better than Cats. I want to see it again and again. Do you ever, remember that SNL sketch?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. One of the best SNL fake commercials ever. But, I mean, it's a phenomenon, certainly. I would say, rather than comparing it to something like Cats, I might compare it more to something like Hamilton.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Like, of its time. This is a little bit older show than Hamilton is. But, you know, it is that kind of phenomenon, zeitgeist kind of thing. And interestingly enough, I have seen the movie. I don't think that's the only parallel between Hamilton and Wicked. I think that they have some similar things to say, which is a weird thing to be pointing out. But I think if you see the movie, I don't want to spoil too much because, Jeremy, I know you haven't seen it yet. And I know it just came out, so a lot of people listening haven't seen it yet. So for those who aren't overly familiar with the show and the soundtrack and all that, I don't want to spoil anything here. But yeah, phenomenal performances across the board. And I was a little skeptical about this from the trailers too. Like I was iffy. I didn't think the trailers were super great. And I honestly was a little bit iffy about Ariana Grande.
As was I.
But I will tell you, man, there had been last week or so, there'd been a little bit of a, hey, she might be a Best Supporting Actress nominee. And I was like, yeah, right. Then I saw the movie. She could be a legit contender for Best Supporting Actress.
It's interesting because I didn't like her from the trailer, yet I'm hearing that it's a very endearing performance and that she really is likable. So maybe this is just out of the fact that you can't take what's essentially going to be a nearly 5-hour movie and condense it down into 2 minutes and properly convey the core of each of these characters, because I didn't.
Yeah,
find
I mean, the character
the
character has some unlikable qualities, and that's absolutely, you know, that's communicated in the trailer. You know, she is vain. She is, you know, she's the popular girl. You know, she's uh-huh. you know, just this. You know, she makes a big point about how nice she is and how, you know, how good she is all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's just this side of smarmy, and it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you're supposed to still like her, but you're supposed to like not like how much she likes herself.
Yeah. I
that
get it.
Kind of thing. But I mean, Ariana Grande plays it just right. Her voice is great in this. She does. It's not like her pop songs. She uses a different kind of style in this that's more fitting to the material. Cynthia Erivo is fantastic. Everybody is so good in it, man. Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Yeoh, and just the whole cast is fantastic. I don't want to get too much into this being a review or anything, but the whole look of the film, the cinematography, the set design, the production values, it all looks fantastic. There's no like bad CGI in this. There's no like they took their time and made this movie right.
First of all, have you seen the musical? And secondly, do you feel like what they've added to the film and decided to split into two parts adds to it?
So I have not seen the musical, so I can't speak to that. My understanding is they have fleshed this out some. This is, what, about a 2 hour and...
40 minutes?
Something like that, and it's part one. That was one of the things I was dubious about here too, because this is, you know, as we mentioned, it's a Broadway show. You go see this on Broadway, you see it all in one night.
Yeah.
And I don't know the runtime of the musical, but I can't imagine it's much longer than the runtime of the part one.
Let's
and it's interesting to me
hours.
How many people don't seem to know that this is a part one too. Like, I know that they didn't like put it in the trailers, Wicked Part One, but when the title card comes up, when you're seeing the movie itself, it does say Wicked Part One. And it does very much, this is not a spoiler since we've already told you there is a second movie coming. It very much ends on a to be continued, literally to be continued on the screen. So, you know, and I did hear a lot of people talking about it in the theater, like, oh, I thought when it said part one, it just meant, you know, we would see part two during the movie. I didn't realize that it was going to be. And I'm like, man, people are like, how do you get excited about wanting to see a movie and not know anything about it?
Well, I would have eventually seen it in the trades, but at first when you told me, it was news to me.
Yeah. And I've talked to a few people like that as well. So I guess some people really do just see a trailer and think, I want to see that, and don't bother looking into anything else. But yeah, I had people like, oh, you know, I thought part two was going to be tonight as part of the movie. It's like, no. And I told people, yeah, part two is going to be coming out next year. So this time next year, we're supposed to get part two.
Is it Warner Brothers or Universal?
Universal.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Wizard of Oz is, pretty much in the public domain, I believe. So, yeah, I mean, you can't like specifically reference the MGM version without.
Sure.
But, you know, the thing, and that's why, you know, you don't see things like Ruby Slippers when there are other adaptations. Because that was unique to the MGM adaptation, that which Warner Brothers now owns. But, you know, some of the iconography comes out of the books. So,
sure.
Yeah, you know, that's where you go from there. I'm still a little curious about splitting this into two. Like, it worked as a movie by itself, and where it leaves off at a good point. It leaves off, I wouldn't say a cliffhanger, but definitely like, ooh, what's going to happen now?
Yeah.
Like, more like, Into Empire Strikes Back.
Into the
Spider-Verse 2? What's that?
Like, Into the Spider-Verse 2, maybe? Or Across the Spider-Verse?
Like, more like Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, is kind of where I'd put it. But, like, the biggest thing to me is, the big show-stopping number from Wicked that everybody knows is the song Defying Gravity, which is in this movie. So they didn't hold it for the second movie.
I see what you mean. What's left?
It's kind of the climax of this movie. And if there has been a criticism of Wicked as a Broadway show, it has been that the final act, the after Defying Gravity, is kind of the lower point of the show. So my understanding is, you know, they have added material to the entirety of this project, of the two movies. They may have added some more songs to the second movie. I don't think there are any new songs in the movie that has just been released, but the second movie may have added some new songs. So, yeah, it remains to be seen how they follow through on the execution of this first movie, but this first movie is fantastic. You know, I like John Chu a lot. This is not the first film of his I liked. I loved In the Heights, which we both loved. As I recall, I was a big fan of his film Crazy Rich Asians. So, you know, the guy's got some cred, and this movie only adds to it. I do think we're going to see this at Oscar time. We got to take a break. We're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube. Jeremy, explain to me, why can't they stop making live-action versions of animated movies?
I'm so glad you asked that. I know, look, there's only two different takes you can have on this. You can say, I love it, or you can say, I don't care for it. And there's no original takes under the sun, because there's only two takes, and I wasn't sure what side you came down on, but I could ask you the same thing. I mean, it's money, right?
Yeah, I suppose, and I mean, I kind of, in fairness, come down on both sides of it, because I do think there have been some good ones.
Like what?
Well, I mean, like Beauty and the Beast was pretty good.
Okay, I get it.
Kenneth Branagh's version of Cinderella, pretty yeah, great.
That was good.
Can't go wrong with Lily James. Lily James is always a win.
I would push back a little bit that that's a remake of the cartoon, especially when we compare it to, or animated film, excuse me, especially when we compare it to The Lion King and Beauty and the Beast, which are so close.
Yeah.
And not to bury the lead, but we're going to talk a little bit about How to Train Your Dragon and the Moana live action remake. And that's why we're having this conversation.
Well, and that's another thing too, is like, you know, there are kind of two routes you can go with it when you're doing this. You can do a straight adaptation or you can do a revisionist version. Like, I mean, probably the best example of that is Maleficent.
Yeah.
To where, you know, you're telling the Sleeping Beauty story, but you're telling it from a different perspective and revealing things that we didn't know. Kind of in the same way that that Wicked is doing, telling
the
backstory.
That's much more interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, the Maleficent movie was, you know, had its pluses and minuses, but, you know, it took a different route versus being just a straight remake. I think the other thing you can look at with these two is some of these things. Are you doing a remake of the animated movie, or are you going back to the source material and readapting the source material and just doing it live action instead of animation this time? And I think Beauty and the Beast and Lion King, well, Lion King was not really a book first anyway, but I mean, unless you count what it rips off of Shakespeare, but, yeah. Those movies, Mulan, it's another one, you know, maybe they're more, although Mulan, I think even is more of an adaptation of the source material than it is of the animated film, because they didn't do the musical numbers and, you know,
didn't
all that
have
stuff.
Mushu in it.
But, you know, you have something like Maleficent, or even Cinderella was arguably more of an adaptation of the original book.
Yeah.
And that's, I bring that up because I think maybe a lot of people don't realize that How to Train Your Dragon was a novel series.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So the question becomes, are they just remaking the animated movie, or are they going back and adapting the novel? And are they going to maybe be, you know, it kind of is like that same thing where everybody talks about, oh, remakes, remakes, remakes. And then you look at something like True Grit, where the Coen brothers made a version of True Grit years after the John Wayne version. And it's like, okay, well, are they remaking the John Wayne version, or are they going back and adapting the original book? And their thing was that they were going back and adapting the original book.
Sure.
And doing faithful adaptation of the book. But people are still going to think of it as a remake. So you kind of have the same thing going on here. But there's something about that feels a little more legit.
Absolutely.
Than like to put it up against another thing that we know we've got coming out, which is a live action version of Moana, which is in this really weird timing stage too, because it's, it hasn't been that long since the original Moana, first of all.
Right.
And then second of all, we've got a sequel to the original Moana coming out next week, an animated sequel. But we're going to turn around and do a live action version within a year or so. And they're both going to have The Rock.
Yeah.
Moana itself was not, that I'm aware of, a book first.
They've been focus testing Moana, like more Moana, but for some reason it's not going over well with people. I don't understand the problem with it.
Well, I think the animated film's going to do really well. I think Moana 2 is going to make a whole lot of money next week.
Yeah, no question about it.
But
I want to say, first of all, about both of these, Moana and How to Train Your Dragon, they're both just incredible. I think they transcend the trapping of being something that you would watch and say, oh, that's a kid's movie. I think a lot of times you can look at DreamWorks and Pixar and say, oh, those are family movies, because there's something in them for everyone. Disney's done a good job with that as well. I love Moana. It's one of my favorite in that whole genre, and How to Train Your Dragon is amazing. You and I saw the trailer for How to Train Your Dragon. We've only seen some set photos from Moana because it's not that far in production yet. But my take is that it looks like a shot-for-shot remake with very little design of anything from the human characters to the dragons. And if you play the trailers next to each other, it's essentially exactly the same thing. And I'm not, to the whole point that you've been making the whole time, I'm not keen on that. You saw the trailer in the movie theater. What are your thoughts on the trailer for How to Train Your Dragon?
I mean, it looks like $1 billion.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that's kind of the point too, is that I think that this first trailer, they don't want to diverge too far from the movie that people know and love.
I think that's fair.
So, you know, remains to be seen. I think when we get some, you know, this is just a teaser. When we get closer to, you know, the actual release, I think we'll see more and we'll be able to make more of a judgment call there. But yeah, the, you know, Toothless looks like Toothless. It's not like a more realistic looking dragon or anything like that. It's just, you know,
textures, but that's about it. Like it looks slightly more textured, but it, like, and if you were to say, Jeremy, in the actual novel, it goes in to describe each of the dragons in great detail. Well, fantastic point on the side of it just being an adaptation, but the dragons have that very, cartoony aesthetic with this realistic sheen over it. And I find that just redundant. It just seems pointless to me. I don't get it.
Well, it was one of the things that was off-putting to me about The Lion King.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get more of that because we've got Mufasa coming out before the end of the year too. Speaking of, you know, more strip mining of, you know, existing properties. We're going to have a prequel to the live action Lion King. So,
at least it's original story.
Well, I mean, I assume. I don't know. Did they ever do a prequel to the animated Lion King? I know they did a couple of
Simba's
sequels.
Pride was the sequel, and then they had some other ones, but no, they hadn't. So while this is going to be overly familiar, even the idea of the prequel or the origin story of the main character, we've seen all of this stuff before, but it is a formula for making a bunch of money because it taps into that thing. And as cynical as I am about the Lion King, I enjoyed it, watching it in the movie theater. It made me mad afterwards that I enjoyed it. I'm like, you're a sucker. You're a stupid sucker. And I'm slapping myself.
You're talking
about
the live action version?
Yeah.
See, I just was not, I could not get into it the way I got into the original animated version.
Absolutely that, for sure. But I feel like it plays on your goodwill towards the originals to where it can. And obviously it felt different for you. It did spark that, a little bit of that feeling that I had, like, of recapturing that moment. I fear I was a little too old when Moana came out and a little too old when How to Train Your Dragon came out, that, like, I don't think I'm going to feel nostalgic in the same way for those movies. And that's not to say nobody will. I mean, somebody saw the first Moana when they were 7 or 8, and now they're going to see the remake when they're 14 or 15. I mean, give or take a couple of years. I don't know exactly how old it is. So maybe for them, they're in that perfect age range. But for most of us, it seems like Moana came out yesterday. You know what I mean?
But you know what? I mean, like, to put it in broader terms, like, one of my favorite Disney movies is The Jungle Book.
Yeah, great movie.
But the live action version of that, I thought was really good. I thought it did enough to differentiate itself from the animated version to work. And same director as The Lion King, Jon Favreau.
Yeah, that's a good example of one that did
and,
work.
You know, more of a photorealistic thing with animals, but it for some reason it worked better than Lion King did. And I think Lion King maybe just stuck a little bit too close to the original. I don't know. I don't have an answer for you there, but all I know is when I see these things, it's like, all right, that looks good. That doesn't look good. The Rock in a muscle suit playing Maui? Like, why does The Rock need a muscle suit?
It's the craziest thing. Buffest man in the world, and they've got him extra buff. And who's it for? I just don't, like, that in particular. Just let The Rock be massive. I know Maui was built like a tanky character, MMORPG or whatever, but, like, it doesn't have to be all that. He can just be the normal, giant, freakishly big guy that he is and not need to be bigger.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what we end up to with Moana 2 coming out this week as well. I think it's going to make a lot of money, but I'm a little bit worried about it because it started out as an attempt at a Moana animated series that they decided to turn into a movie.
Interesting.
And Lin-Manuel Miranda is not doing the songs this time. So we shall see. That's coming out next week. Got to take a break. We'll be back in more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analysis channel on YouTube. Jeremy, we were just talking about our good friend, your good friend and mine, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, before the break there. Yeah, did Dwayne The Rock Johnson get the opportunity to turn down the Sexiest Man Alive?
I have to imagine that he submitted his own request to be picked as the Sexiest Man Alive.
You think
I'm just realizing this guy is not as big as he wants to be. I mean, from Black Adam to the new muscle suit in Moana, I think he just wants to be and sees himself as bigger than he is. It's crazy.
You think he was turned down?
I mean, he's not. He wasn't picked.
Well, I mean, okay, so in further to what you're saying about maybe The Rock might be not as big as he thinks he is, even though he's maybe the most recognizable star on the planet right now.
Right.
He just put out a new movie a couple weeks ago, Red One.
Heard of it.
Christmas movie, where mm-hmm. he plays like Santa's bodyguard or whatever, something like that. And some people, I'm not necessarily saying I'm one of them, some people are saying this movie's a bomb. Like that, and I'm not talking about creatively, I'm talking about financially.
Yeah.
Because they spent about $200 million on making this movie. And it's not just him, but it's Chris Evans, and it's J.K. Simmons, and it's Lucy Liu, you know, big cast in this. Big effects, action-driven movie. And it's made, what, about $20, $30 million at the box office so far, something like that?
Woof. So the plot thickens on this movie, though, and actually you mentioned something that I wasn't aware of prior to you saying it, and it was while we weren't on air, so I'm just going to leave it at that. No, wouldn't that be terrible for the listener? you had mentioned that the movie was made for streaming. So how does that work in its favor or against it? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, you always kind of have to judge these movies that are made by streaming services and then put out theatrically by different standards, because really the theatrical run is almost like a commercial for people to watch it on streaming. Like it makes a little extra money, but that's not what the audience that they necessarily produced it for. They produced it for people to, you know, in this case, come and subscribe to Amazon Prime, and they're generating Amazon Prime subscriptions. So that's the basis that, you know, you could look at. Like another great example is Killers of the Flower Moon. People are, you know, saying, oh, well, you know, that didn't. Yeah, they spent a lot of money on it. It didn't make that much in the theaters, but it got a lot of Oscar nominations, and it got a lot of people to subscribe to Apple TV to watch it. So these streaming services do judge by different standards than other services do. The other thing that I would point out,
sure, with the amount of analytics that Amazon is running, they're a finely tuned machine. They probably understand the mind of the consumer way better than I ever would. But part of me just wonders, like, if you kept that theatrical run going through Christmas, would it generate more revenue than hoping that you get it on streaming as soon as possible and then have people subscribe for it for the holidays? But I guess maybe that's just my antiquated way of looking at things. How do you generate revenue when everybody's already subscribed to Amazon?
Well, I mean, I think assuming that everybody's already subscribed to Amazon is a mistake, first of all. It's not even the largest streaming service. So, I think that there is a factor in driving new subscriptions or driving churn there. But, in fairness, too, I just looked it up. This movie has made $89.5 million at the box office so far. So it's getting close to about half its budget. Now, if you want to actually have a profitable movie, you've got to make more than double your budget.
Mm-hmm.
But it's made a respectable amount worldwide. It's only been out for, you know, a week, 2 weeks. And
I didn't hear it was awful. I just haven't heard anybody raving about it.
The reviews aren't great, but you know what? There's a lot of holiday movies that become holiday classics that did not get great reviews.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And that's another thing that I would think of in the case of this particular movie. before you write it off as a bomb, holiday movies have replay factor like almost nothing else. Like these movies come back year after year after year until people start considering them classics. And I mean,
yeah,
I can,
that's a good point.
I can point out any number of movies to you that were seen as a flop on initial theatrical release that are now considered holiday classics. A Christmas,
well, keep it to yourself. We don't want to know.
A Christmas Story, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, Polar Express. You know, these movies did not necessarily do great when they were first released,
yep.
But yep. Over time, even Elf, I don't think was a huge hit. I think it made money and was respectable, but it wasn't like, you know, what it's become.
When we were in New York City last year for Christmas, there was Elf merchandise and just promotional material everywhere throughout the city. And that really just kind of reinforces your point. If this gains a substantial amount of converts and fans, as in young people see this movie when it comes to holiday season, they will inevitably hold on to it and cherish it and share it with the next generation, you know?
Yeah. You want to know a couple other movies that were not considered big successes when they were initially released?
I said no last time. You said it anyway, so I guess go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, to just throw another holiday one out there for you, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Not a massive success, but, you know, just so we can tie everything together in this show. You know what was not a big financial success when it was initially released? The Wizard of Oz.
Look at you go.
So, I mean, you know, and you know, another one that was not a big financial success when it was originally released, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
And these are movies that are like cornerstones of American culture now. Now, am I saying that that's what's going to happen to Red One? No, there's no way I'm saying that. But do I think that Amazon's going to make its money back on this movie? Yeah, I think they probably will.
All good points. Yeah, I think that's all very worth considering. I'm not sure how you continue to generate revenue off something if it's not through merchandise and through advertising. And if you don't have an Amazon Plus subscription, maybe you still continue to get ads. Again, I don't know the inner workings of all of that stuff, but if it does endure, then there's always going to be revenue generated off of it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's that kind of thing that if it gets people to sign up for Amazon so they can watch it, or it gets people that already have Amazon watching it, so that means they're continuing their subscription for another month, then Amazon's making money. You know, if you don't want to ever give people an off ramp from something where you're automatically debiting $15 from their account every month.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you create these things that are, oh, I've got to see that. And, you know, it may be a series, it may be a movie, it may be whatever. You know, this is a thing where having the theatrical release makes people more conscious of it. And that's been proven already. There's been a number of these where either a film was a theatrical release, but it wasn't really discovered in theatrical and then it was found on streaming, or a film was made for streaming and they put it out in the theaters for a limited run. It increases the awareness of the movie and people want to check it out on streaming. And then when it hits streaming, it, you know, if maybe it finds an audience, maybe it doesn't, but it, you know, it has a better chance. It's going to do better than it would be if you just threw it out there on streaming. So do I think that in the long term, making $250 million films for streaming is the right way to go? I don't know. I mean, some studios have done it and said, oh, this is not working for us, and backed away from it. Looking at you, Max. But you know, some have this opposite structure. And Jeff Bezos is many things, but I don't think he's a dumb man. I mean,
no.
You know, guy started selling books in his garage, and now he's one of the richest men in the world. You know, and a guy that, let's face it, even if he ends up losing half of what he put into this movie, that's what, lunch money for him?
Oh yeah, there's no way for somebody that big to fail. I wonder if there's a middle lane where you can advertise a movie as if it were going to the theaters and then save the money from not actually screening it in the theater, but try to drive people to your subscription service that way.
I mean, it exists. Yeah, we've certainly seen it with things like Coming to America 2, and
you are so good at pulling these examples, dude.
I mean, like, Eddie Murphy is like the poster boy for that right now. You know, the new Beverly Hills Cop that came out earlier this year. You know, there's a number of those. So yeah, I mean, that model's there, but I don't think that necessarily creates the same kind of buzz. Like, there's something about the word of mouth that gets generated out of the people that do see something in the theater that drives things a little higher. And I mean, I'll give you another great example of that. A movie that you and I both did see in the theaters that we both really loved, but was financed by a streaming service and now is on streaming and is reaping the benefits on streaming. And that's The Substance.
Yeah.
And it's not even like one of the major streaming services. It's frankly, I don't think I had heard of it until a couple of weeks ago. Mubi.
Yeah, right. That was a discovery for both of us.
Yeah, it's like, why is The Substance? Jeremy and I had this conversation. Why is this on Mubi? Why is it not on Netflix or whatever? And then we found out that it's because Mubi financed the movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know it's an interesting times, and we'll see how things continue to develop, and we'll talk about them as they do. But until next week, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.